Pirkei Avot with Rabbeinu Yonah. We're up to the third chapter, the fifth Mishnah. Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana Omer. Rabbi Nechunya, the son of Kana, we'll assume that's his name, even though it might not have been his name, because Kana, well, he says the following. Kolam kabel alav ol Torah, all who take upon themselves the yoke of Torah, ma'avirin mimenu ol malchut. So then they remove from him the yoke of the kingdom, the ol derech eretz, and the yoke of derech eretz, which we'll also, we'll try to understand, derech eretz sometimes means making a livelihood, sometimes it means being intimate with a wife, it can mean different things. Sometimes it means having derech eretz, the way we use it in modern terminology. V'chol ha'porek mimenu ol Torah, but whoever removes the yoke of Torah from upon him, notnin alav ol malchut, so then they place upon him the yoke of the kingdom, suddenly he finds himself dealing with taxes and authorities, etc. V'ol derech eretz, and then he has to deal with the yoke of derech eretz. What does that mean? Explains Rabbeinu Yonah. Achar she'oseh torato ikar, umlachto arai, if a person says, my main focus is Torah, and my work, well, I got to do that, but that's the arai, that's the passing, that's the fleeting part of my life. So that's not the way most people lead their lives. Most people, I got my job, and if I have a free hour, I'll go learn. No, even that hour, if my focus is Torah, and everything else is because I got to do it, so then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yishmoreh Makol Damara, Shelo Yitzlech Livatel Minimut Torah. When a person really puts his focus and his efforts on learning Torah, then there's a special help from above that he shouldn't have to waste his time from learning Torah. If I'm willing to focus, now, willing to focus means I'm really willing to focus. I'm going to dedicate and I'm going to put my strengths in learning. And even though he'll have the baron who's in charge of his manor, and he's always telling people, I want you to do this job for me and that job for me, he won't be summoned. If he wants to learn Torah, he'll fulfill it. And here we see a very nice example of this, of the Jews in Egypt. Pharaoh says, guys, come, I need you to volunteer a day. The tribe of Levi says, I'm learning, I'm sorry, I can't. They never got into the servitude of Mitzrayim. The rest of the Jews said, we have to be good citizens. Pharaoh asked us for one day to volunteer. We should all show up. They showed up and they never ended up leaving. They lost everything. And we often make that mistake in our own lives, where we're learning and then we have things which, I should volunteer here, I could really do that, and we end up leaving. And once you leave, it's very hard to get back. The Mishnah says if you dedicate yourself, if you really take the yoke of Torah, it's not just I show up and I learn. It's that I accept the yoke. It's just like a person doesn't think, I could have a job and not show up in the morning. I could have a job and I'll show up whichever day's work for me. No, you have a job. You know you have to be there every day at a certain time and put in a certain number of hours and get a certain amount of results. Do we approach our learning that way? Or is learning by the way? Well, if I accept the yoke of Torah, that means I expect of myself, put in a certain amount of time, get a certain amount of results, I'm going to take it seriously. It's not less than the job. That's the yoke of Torah. So if you accept the yoke of Torah, so then the yoke of dealing with the politicians, the baron of the manor, etc., doing jury duty, they'll pass that from you. Ve'ol derech eretz lo yitzterech lasot mlacha harbe letzorch parnasato. So again, if he really accepts the yoke of Torah, he won't have to work so hard to make a living. Uve'me'at yaspik lo kedei chayuto. And with a little bit of work, he'll have enough to live. Kimlechet ha'tzadik mitbarechet v'nafsho smecha b'chelko. When a tzaddik works, he finds blessing in what he does, and he's happy with his lot. So people think the tzaddik could work 20 minutes a day, and he'll be as wealthy as someone else who works 10 hours a day. We had a very big tzaddik called Rabbi Yaakov, who wrote the Tur, Baal HaTurim. And he writes in his work that he would learn all week, and he'd often ask his father, the Rush, Rabbeinu Asher, whether he's supposed to take off a meal during the week because he has just enough to eat during the week. And Shabbos, he has the same meal as during the week. The same dry bread with whatever he ate all week was what he ate on Shabbos too. That was his meager living. And he'd ask his father often, he writes, am I supposed to fast a day during the week so that I'll have a little bit more on Shabbos? Or do I say, this is what I can do, so that's my Shabbos, okay? And he says he never got clarity in that. He'd always try to get his father to give him a clearer answer. You can understand the poor father. That's the type of question he has to answer. But look, when we read the Mishnah, we can't assume that means you're going to work very little and you'll end up living in the lap of luxury. No. Like he said, he'll be happy with his lot, which is another way of saying his lot won't be so great in the materialistic world, but he'll be happy with it. And when a person removes the yoke of Torah, so then he gets the yoke of the kingdom. A person thinks, I'll just leave Torah and I'll work real hard. And what Hashem does is, his plan doesn't exactly work. And suddenly he's summoned by the king, or suddenly he finds himself with extraordinary taxes. The verse in Proverbs says that the heart of kings is in the hands of Hashem, and Hashem shifts it in each direction. So when a person thinks, I don't need to learn, I'll take time off and I'll work. But you could have learned, you could have worked less. I want to make more. So the Mishnah tells him, don't worry, you'll find yourself working more, but you won't necessarily see the products in the direction you think. When a person has the capacity to accept the yoke of Torah, and he chooses otherwise, so then that's a segula, so to speak. The Mishnah says, it's very common that he'll work pretty hard, and he won't find himself ever attaining that state that he thinks he'll attain, of tranquility, of making an excellent living. And the Mishnah is really telling him that even if he reaches that point where he makes more, he won't be happy with his lot. And he'll find himself working day after day, week after week, trying to become rich. And even if he gets richer and richer, he won't find himself happy with it. As the verse says in Ecclesiastes, if what you love is money, then you're never going to be satiated for money. If that's the attitude, so then there's always more, there's higher to climb. So a person's always working, and he's never going to rest, because he always has to make more. And then it's one of the challenges in life, and it's part of the question when you choose a position to go into. Do you have the capacity to work enough to live comfortably and not more than that? Sometimes a person says, it's an all or nothing deal. I have a job. I can't show up 3 days out of the week. I have to show up every day. Lawyers will sometimes tell you, I can't work a 10-hour workday. I have to work a 15, 16-hour workday. There's no way I could stay in the firm if I don't do that. Accountants tell you the same thing sometimes, depending on the firm they're in. So that's part of what you have to think about when you take on a job. Now, people sometimes are very focused on getting ahead in the world, but their definition of getting ahead is only in the material world. And I sometimes ask, who's bringing up the kids? Is that getting ahead if you're not living life? Do you take out time for introspection? Do you take out time to develop yourself? All of life you're working, you're in the rat race. So that's called you got ahead, because at the end of the game, you got the most money in the bank. It's like the game of life in Monopoly. My kids are into Monopoly now. And I keep wondering if it's an educational game or not. Because the whole point is to have more money in my bank. That's the point of life. I don't know, you got to own more real estate, collect more rent, have hotels, and the kids
bankrupt are... Everybody else.
Bankrupt everyone else, right? It's very interesting. You know, I never looked at it that way. I played Monopoly as a kid, and now I see my kids playing Monopoly, and I keep wondering, is that really the message I want to give them?
You want to know it exists, but you don't want to choose that route, really. You have to limit it. It's a very big decision, because especially in like Western secular world, you know, success equals good in many ways to people. The idea of, I'm successful, I'm a good man, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, and then you rationalize, right? I didn't spend time with my wife and kids because I wanted to provide them with this and that. But really, it's a lot easier in the office where you control the situation than maybe at home and this and that. So, I mean, from my experience, it can easily get swallowed up, and it's very easy to fool yourself, especially if you grow up in a culture where that's, you know...
But it starts earlier, too, right? Now people have so much student debt.
It depends. Yeah. If you have to do your due diligence, if you're going to become a doctor and you owe $200,000, one thing. If someone tells you, I'm going to go with $200,000 in debts to become a Spanish filmmaker or something, you have to ask before. I always say, who has these degrees and where are they now? What happened to your last graduating class before you take these huge loans?
But a lot of it is also taking the time, pausing, and looking at life. I've mentioned numerous times that I try every few months to take a half hour, 45 minutes to stop, look at my schedule, look at where I'm investing my time, and analyze, is this the direction I should be on?
How do you do that?
I try to do it once every 2-3 months. And I that's a look that that's an a vantage point that's more micro. On the macro level, so my wife and I will try to have a discussion every year around this time of year, because this is the time of year when you decide where you're renting, where you're sending your kids to school, so how you're dividing your time. Usually this time of year, around Pesach time, we'll try to find time to go out and talk for an hour or two and think about how we want to see next year, what our schedule is going to look like, where we're investing our time. I think one of the reasons that people end up in the rat race and never leave is because they never stop to think about it. They never take the time to really think, is this what I want? Let's think, where will I be in 5 years, and 10 years, and in 20 years? Where do I want to be? I always say, make yourself a piece of paper, put down 20 years from now, and write down, where do you want to be? How many people do that? Most people who come for a meeting with me and they're asking what they should do tomorrow or next month, I ask them, where do you want to be in 20 years? Now let's go back after you filled that out. Only after you filled that out, ask yourself, where do I want to be in 10 years? And after you filled that out, ask yourself, where do I want to be in 5 years? Wait, we'll get back to the moment. And after you've decided where you want to be in 5 years, ask yourself where you want to be in 3 years. And then ask yourself where you want to be in 6 months. But you have to work that system. 20, 10, 5, 3, and 6 months. And then look at what you're doing today and ask yourself, what I'm doing today, is that, am I on the path to get where I want to be in 6 months? Probably not. Probably not. Most people, if you ask them where they want to be in 6 months, they're not on the path to get there. Ask them where they want to be in 20 years, they're not on the path to get there either. But by doing this chart, you start looking at life and saying, wait, so where should I channel myself? Where do I want to be in 20 years, in 10 years, in 5 years, in 3 years, in 6 months? How many times have I sat with students here who don't have a degree, and they're running out to get a job, and they didn't do Ulpan, and I ask them, where do you want to be in 20 years? What do you mean? I mean, describe to me your life in 20 years. How would you like to wake up in the morning? What do you want to see around you? What do you want your day to look like? What do you want your family to look like? Well, I want to have a family. I want to have a wife, kids. I want to have a house. Great. Now let's go from 20 to 10 to 5 to 3. Are you on the path to be there in 20 years? And I find that even at a later age, you can ask yourself that question. And then it helps you focus and get there. People have changed their whole lives working off this piece of paper. 20, 10, 5, 3, 6 months. And I think that it's a big deal because we're so focused on today, tomorrow, and we barely even think, where do I want to be in 3 years and 5 years? How many times have people told me, I want to have a better job in 5 years? And I ask, what are you doing to get there? They say, I'm working. And I say, don't you need another degree? Yeah. So are you doing something about it? Where's the big plan? We get so soaked up in the now and the difficulties of today and tomorrow, we forget, where do I want to be in 20 years? And that's a big question, because today and tomorrow and 3 years from now pass pretty quickly. And they'll pass, and I will not be on the path to get where I want to be in 20 years. And most people never get on that path. Most people go their whole lives, and they never get on that path of where they want to be in 20 years. And they live their whole lives thinking a hypothetical wish. I wish I were there. So,
at least here, I think people, most people you see who came here, made some decisions, left something.
Right.
Which, but many people I know, they just lived someone else's dream. My mother wanted me to be a doctor, or, as a kid, it was great to